Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Cider Voice. We're going to make up for something that you were all missing last week, which is the fact that we didn't have Justin on. So I've decided, since Adam is out of the country, that we need to even up our serving of wells. And we've got me and Justin special coming to you now. Justin, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Sneaking back in, I'm going to supplant Adam. I'll start writing for Cider Review and then replace him over time, and no one will know the difference other than a drastic downturn in the quality of prose.
Well, maybe, but I suspect that the level of passion delivered is going to be equal, so we can at least give you that.
Enthusiasm, absolutely.
Absolutely. So what we're going to talk about today is a little project you've been working on for a few months that's hopefully going to come together in the future. And we wanted to talk about it because we thought that people might be interested in doing it themselves. We've got a diverse listener base. A lot of the people that listen are cider makers, but also a lot of cider hobbyists and people in a similar position to you. So what's the idea, Justin?
So the idea is that I've been wanting to run a tasting for ages. My friends will attest that given half a chance, if people are not wary around me, I'll talk their ear off. I mean, about anything, but cider has been one particular topic of interest to me for a while. And given the opportunity, I love to talk about it. I find it very interesting. I find it exciting taking people through sort of my journey and then introducing them to things, because they almost invariably have the response, exactly the response which I want, which is the response which I had when I first tried aspirational cider, which is, this is completely different to anything I have and I've ever had, and it's great. How did, you know, where do you find this? Where's this from? And then getting engaged with it. And I think I'm fortunate that a lot of my friends, you know, I surround myself with people like myself, people who tend to tack towards being easily interested and obsessed by things. And I decided that a little while ago I wanted to run a tasting. And now I finally actually whipped myself into actually doing it. And I'm in the planning stages of it. So, yeah, that's basically the plan at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So super cool. I'm really excited for you to get yours going. And I think that there's so much value in having a tasting. You know, from we're gonna run through this in kind of a why, a what, a how, a who, a where, etc. And we'll start with the why of it, because that's the really bit that is most meaningful, I suppose. Mm. You know, from my point of view as a cider maker, or maybe not even a cider maker, but someone that loves cider, the reason why we do the podcast, the reason why Adam's been writing articles about cider for 5 years, the reason why we're going out grafting new varieties into our orchards, is because we love sharing apples and flavors and this unique experience with people. And the best way to show people the window into that world and to for them to see your passion is through hosting a tasting. It's a great way to start. We do them on the farm a lot. I think almost any cider maker will run tastings. So if you're listening to this and you find a local cider maker, even if it's not on their website, you could email them and ask, is there an opportunity for you to take a group of your mates to go and do a tasting or something like that? Because they're just such enjoyable things. We talk a lot about, well, in the general cider world, not necessarily on the podcast, in the general cider world, we talk about sharing bottles and tasting cider on keg and this and that, but actually just going out and being involved in a tasting is something that most people don't do. Most people just go to the pub, have a drink at home. They don't get the opportunity necessarily to sit down for a considered cider tasting where you work through flavors, you start to build an understanding and education, and you can really get something out of it. So that's where I'm coming from. We're talking about a tasting. I'm actually doing a tasting myself tomorrow. So as people are listening to this, I'll be hosting a tasting in Sheffield at the Old Shoe. And then on Thursday, I'm hosting another tasting at Keg, Cask and Bottle in Prestwich in North Manchester. So that's my, you know, I really love it. I think that the word of mouth and that personal experience of sharing your passion is so valuable for helping people understand why cider is so good. Because fundamentally, the flavors that we experience when we drink cider for the first time are very alien to us. We don't really get it. Yeah, it's tannin like in wine and like in tea, and it's acidity and that. But actually, how they're expressed in cider is something that's not, it's just not what people are used to. They don't have the words to describe it or anything else. So how far are you along are you in your planning process for your tasting, Justin? Should we talk about the who first? I mean, you've mentioned that you're getting your friends to come along. That's in case it's not obvious, people, what we're talking about. We're talking about just organizing a tasting yourself for some friends. It's not fine, you know, and as simple as that, or as make it as complex as you want.
So yeah, so at the moment, we'll see what happens in the future. It could be fun to do more of these if this one goes well. If I decide that I have a taste for it, ha ha. I originally trained as a performer. Well, not originally, actually. Originally trained as an Egyptologist, but that's a whole other can of worms. but I'm nominally I'm an actor and a director and a teacher by trade. So standing up in front of a bunch of people and talking to them is something I enjoy doing. Something that I get a lot of enjoyment out of. So we'll see where it goes. At the moment, it's very much just friends. I've been sort of testing the waters with friends for a while. A bunch of people saying, yeah, that sounds really interesting, that sounds exciting, that sounds cool, I'd be interested to see that. And then a couple of weeks ago, it was one of those funny feelings of, I don't know why I'm procrastinating with this anymore. This is something I want to do. Why shouldn't I just be doing it now? And bit the bullet, actually started getting in touch with people, and you know, now we're into planning. So trying to find a venue, looking at what the set list is going to be, as it were, thinking about what I want to theme the tasting around, what points I want to get across. At the moment, friends. Yeah. You know, get everybody to stick in some money so that we can, so you know, I'm not spending £150 on bottles with, you know,
treating all your friends to the night of their lives.
Yeah, exactly. You know, laying on the largesse of a host. But yeah, so that's the basic idea.
I think that's the fun part of it, actually, is that it doesn't need to be an enormous thing. You know, if you've got, you can find five mates that want to come hang out and everyone puts in a tenner, you know, depending on who you're buying the cider from, maybe a little bit more, but that's enough to get yourselves five or six bottles. Some of those bottles could be the very, very best cider being made in the UK. And suddenly, you know, you're just having an evening together.
One of the things I find exciting about cider as compared to wine or whiskey is that the barrier for entry and the barrier for accessing really good stuff is relatively low. You know, if you want to try some of the best wine being made in the world, unless you are super keyed in and really know your way around wine, where you can be like, aha, here is a £10 bottle that's the greatest bottle ever and no one knows about it, and I only know about it because I'm a nerd. I mean, okay, great, lucky you. But most of the rest of us are stuck going, well, you know, I don't have £800 lying about to spend on a single consumable. I can't, that's absurd. Whereas with cider, you can spend £20 and get something that is superlatively good, interesting, and worthwhile, and intriguing, and with a great story behind it. So there's certainly a value for money aspect in there.
Yeah, and actually, if I there's another aspect of the accessibility that maybe doesn't get talked about enough, which is that if you decide to get together with some friends and you buy six bottles from six different producers, and you email each of those producers being like, look, I've bought this cider and we're going to have an evening together with some mates where we're going to, you know, sit down and share it together, and we're going to be thinking and talking about cider, then invariably every single producer that you send that email to will send you back a load of information about it. They'll give you the opportunity to really enrich your experience, enrich your understanding of the bottle, and they'll do it for free. And you know, that's a great way to really nerd out on doing a tasting.
Absolutely. I mean, this is something that Adam has mentioned, as well as yourself, once again, here, this very place, this very podcast, is the accessibility of cider, because it's such a relatively small world. One is able to have a direct line with a lot of producers. You can directly talk to them and hear about what they are making, what they think about their produce, actually engage with the people creating the stuff, which is hugely exciting, especially as someone who, you know, I'm starting to get to know a bunch of people within the cider world, but outside of that, I don't really know many people who work in food or drink. And so much of my experience of food or drink is really alienating. I'm like, well, it comes out of a package. At the fancier end, it might be bought at a market or, you know, from behind an extremely well aesthetically laid out counter. But other than that, it comes with a bunch of marketing spiel and a price tag, and I can Google it if I'm interested. Whereas the ability to actually reach out and hear, this is what it was like making it, these are the conditions, this is why we do it, that's super exciting. Of course, as we've said before, please don't harass any cider makers for information. They're busy people. But
yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's say we've convinced people that it's a good idea. How are you going to structure your tasting? Have you put much thought to that already?
Yeah, so that's what a lot of where my thinking is directed towards at the moment. I'm wanting to frame this as an introduction specifically to dry cider styles. Most pub cider, as we know, tends to tack sweet and carbonated. And so most people's experience of cider, especially, you know, amongst it, basically, unless you're in a friendship group of a group of people who have grown up where cider is made, you are generally likely to find that most people's experience of cider is going to be sweet and fizzy. I'm, you know, still versus is bottle conditioned is something that's less interesting to me than the idea of dry cider, specifically dry tannic cider. Bunch of reasons for this. One is that a lot of the makers that I like are making dry tannic cider, including yourself, Albert. Once again, shameless Ross Shills, or the favorite podcast I listen to says, "Shills get paid. I'm a mark. I'm not a shill. I'm a mark." But a lot of the ciders I find very interesting are tannic and dry. Not exclusively. There's plenty that aren't that are wonderful. But there's a little bit of kind of an extremophile about attitude about this, where dry tannic ciders are the most different you can get from sweet carbonated pub cider, because they have flavor of their varietals, but they don't necessarily taste, quote unquote, of apples in the same way. It's not like I'm going to suck on this apple flavored sweet. It's like, well, this tastes of Dabernet, and Dabernet tastes of Dabernet, and if you take a bite out of a Dabernet, aside from the fearsome tannin content, it will probably have elements of these flavors you can recognize from the cider. But they're different flavors from what you get, and the experience of the tannin is very different. The experience of the dryness is very different. Wild ferment as well. Anyway, this is a very, very long and roundabout way, as is my usual manner, to say I'm wanting this to essentially function as an introduction to dry, tacking, tannin, tannic cider. And from across the country, you know, most of my contact with cider comes from three counties and all that, and kind of what's loosely termed the West Country. But, you know, there's a world of stuff out there, but that's the focus. And specifically as an introduction. So I'm probably not going to include a Harry Masters jersey, because I feel like that might be a little bit of, you know, hurling a brick of cesium into the pond. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think actually the key thing from that is, you know, you're putting together the energy to host this tasting, you're getting your friends to come, and you're going to present it. So you don't just need to like do a cider 101. These are the ciders you must try. You need to make a lineup of cider that you're really excited about and you're really passionate about, because that's what people are going to enjoy drinking. When they're sharing that with you, they're going to get it in a way that it's not just some kind of droll, serious, detached presentation of this is what an acidic cider tastes like. Which is all important, but yeah, we're talking about, you know, basically having fun and getting into cider and sharing cider if you're having fun.
Well, exactly. Like, there's sort of two, I suppose we touched a little bit on the why earlier. There's a couple of different motivators behind me wanting to do this tasting. One of them, as I said, is just to stand up in front of a bunch of people and have them listen to me and get to show off a bit. Let's not kid ourselves. That's a part of it. But the two other, what it feels like driving factors are advocacy and sharing enjoyment. This is something that I find it's increasingly big part of my life. It's a big hobby of mine. It's becoming one of my favorite sort of things to drink and one of my favorite consumable things. And because it is relatively niche, it's sometimes difficult to share that in most contexts, because it's like, well, what are you drinking there? Oh, I'm having this quite specific thing. Whereas being able to share that and go, hey, everybody, come and look at this cool thing. Look at this interesting thing. I hope that you will find it as interesting as I do. I hope that you'll be as moved by the story of this and by the struggle of cider making as I am. I want to share that. And also the same thing with advocacy, where I think that this is, I hate to refer to it as a product, but that's what it is. This product, this thing is interesting and beautiful and worth your time and worth everybody's time, and the people who make it deserve to be recognized and deserve to have success. And I want that to happen. I want to see people, you know, I want to be able to go into a local drinkery and see, even if I'm not intimately familiar with the maker, see something and go, I know that that was made by someone who gives a shit, and I know that was made in a way that gives a shit, in a way that matters, and exactly. is a part of heritage as well. There's heritage in there too.
Yeah. And I think that you know, to everybody listening, you can't overestimate or over exaggerate rather the significance of what it means to get your mates into cider, and to decide to become an advocate for cider and to do a tasting. And one of the things you could do is you could ask a bar to be the host and to have it in their place or something like this, because craft cider is so powered by word of mouth. It has this circular problem, cider, where if you want to go out and drink cider, as you've been talking about, Justin, it's almost certainly not possible, because the number of pubs in the UK that actually serve real cider is less than 1%. But those same pubs, they, even if they wanted to have any cider, there's not actually enough of it really being made. The distribution of it is a real challenge, so they can't necessarily get it in that easily, but there's not that many people making it because there's nobody going out and asking for it. But they can't go out and ask for it because it's not been stocked. But it's not been stocked because it's not been made. But it's not being made because nobody's asking for it. So it's a circle that goes round and round, and it changes by everybody who loves cider sharing their love of cider and helping to build that market as what, you know, frustratingly, real cider, like, ultimately is like quite a niche drink, but the people that enjoy it, they so enjoy it. And it's so easy to be welcomed into that world that it can be really great. I'm going to say, maybe if your vibe isn't dry tannic cider, then it is still useful to do a cider 101. Whenever I host a tasting, what my favorite thing to do is at the start of every tasting is to dry a single variety bittersweet and a single variety sharp or bitter sharp variety. Mm-hmm. Try them in two glasses at the same time. Experience where on the palate their flavors are coming in, because a sharp is going to come in right at the beginning. It's going to have the freshness, the bite. That acid is on the front of your tongue. And then you have the bittersweet, which is the opposite. It's got that absence of flavor at the start, and instead it has the depth of flavor in the finish, on the back of the palate, tannins, whether they're mean and green, or whether they're textured, whether they're leathery, whether they've got astringency, bitterness, you know, all that kind of thing. And once people have, like, literally physically experienced that distinction, it's like a light bulb moment, because actually you can understand it then. And then what you do with everybody is you say, okay, go ahead, pour that first glass into the second glass. And everyone's like, wait, what? What? You're allowed to do that? It's like, yeah, that's what cider makers do every day. And so then they make that one basic blend, and everyone's like, oh my God, it tastes so different, because we're combining and we're bringing these flavors together in a way that's understandable for people. And then that kind of basic welcome into the world puts into context everything else that you taste after that point.
Well, Albert, I'm going to steal that. That's a really cool opening. I think I'll do that. It's funny you mentioning about the kind of introduction to the world and the clarification, because as we said earlier, you know, cider tastes of cider. You know, you use the term real cider. Real cider tastes of real cider. It doesn't taste of anything else. And like any tasting, you can give tasting notes that are, well, I taste X, Y, and Z, and these are generally accepting tasting notes of X, Y, and Z. But they're redolences. It's not like you've literally, I don't know, when you're drinking Fox Whelp, you're like, I have literally poured strawberry laces into a glass. No, that's it's metaphor and analogy.
Yeah.
And I sometimes liken it a bit to music, because I know that the same is true for wine. The idea of something that you need to be introduced to and have the flavors explained to, I used to be a bit resistant to, because I was like, well, if I can't understand it self-evidently, then what's the point? Now, the fact of the matter is that you can get an appreciation for it self-evidently. You know, you can have a glass of something and go, that is tasty, and think no more of it. And that is a completely legitimate way to drink. You can listen to a piece of music and go, this sounds good and I like it, and think no more about it, and that is totally legitimate and true. But when one can be taken through and given a little bit of a, so why is this going like this? What is there to look out for? It can completely alter your appreciation for something. I distinctly remember one time with music, I was sat down with a friend of mine who's a professional musician, and we just ended up listening to a bunch of different classical composers who I'd not really listened to very much for a long time. And he was taking me through and going, no, but this is what's happening in this moment. This is why it matters. This is why it's making you feel like this. And that, again, it was that light bulb moment of having that, the clarity and the ability to articulate. Instead of just going, oh, that bit was cool, and it was, I don't know why, it was just cool. The ability to articulate and go, no, this was what was happening. It's exciting. It's engaging. It's creating a language to talk about your experience that you can share with. Obviously, as somebody in the arts, that's fascinating to me. That's such a central part of my artistic drive and my engagement with the arts is, you know, that the arts provide a language to talk about shared experience. And being able to sort of extend that to, you know, something as essential as taste, which is such a sense, you know, it's one of the five senses. There's nothing to get in the way of it. It's just that it is one of the essential experiences of being a human. But then starting to gain a vocabulary to talk about that and to get deep into that, I find that, in case you can't tell, I find that quite moving.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I totally know what you mean. Yeah, and I think it's in everything. It's not just in the arts, but it's in, like, you know, the people that love stuff are the ones that understand it.
Yeah,
people that love football are the ones that are coaching it and spending all day thinking about football. And the people that love mathematics are the ones that spend their entire lives dedicated to the academic pursuit of mathematics, and so on and so on. And the last thing I'll touch on is the way you're doing it. I mean, most people, if they're hosting a tasting with some mates, are just going to have it at someone's house, which is cool. And the only thing that you should consider otherwise is that actually, if you're in an area which is lucky enough to already have a cider club, then you should definitely be going and attending that. If you're listening to this and you're anywhere near Herefordshire and you aren't attending my cider club, what are you doing? Our cider club is the last Saturday of every month, and it's literally going to be the best evening. If you listen to this podcast, the best evening of your month is going to be cider club.
Incapable of not marketing yourself, Albert.
Well, it's just like, and if you listen to this podcast and you're in, you know, anywhere in North or East London, and you're not going to the cider tastings at the Hop Inn in Hornchurch, or if you listen to this podcast and you're anywhere near Greater Manchester and you're not attending cider club in Manchester, what are you doing? Because these are fantastic evenings. And you can go to them even if you're by yourself, because you're going to meet other people that like listening to cider voice and that love cider. So I think looking for those events is great. But just because there is a cider club in Manchester doesn't mean that if you're in Manchester, you can't decide to organize your own tasting with your mates. And you can be the gatestone. Rather than saying, oh, you should come with me to cider club, because I think there's some, you know, sometimes there's like a layer of intimidation there. I wish we could get more people to come to cider club who aren't in, you know, they've been brought by their mate, but it just doesn't seem to happen. But I think, you know, hopefully, you know, I think the more tastings people put together, the better. Yeah. All right. Cheers, everybody. That's Cider Voice for another week.
Cheers, everyone. See you soon.